This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Well, bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council, Gay Men's Health Centre on Joy 94.9.
This is Well on Joy 94.9, presented to you each and every week by the Victorian AIDS Council, where we discuss all things sex, sexual health, and the overall health and well-being of the gender, sex, and sexually diverse community. I'm Cal, and I'm joined in the studio by my three charming co-hosts from the Well team, John, Jack, and Daniel. Happy New Year to all of you.
And yay. Happy New Year to you and everybody out there listening.
Absolutely. It's very exciting.
It is.
I'm happy to close the door on 2016.
Well, so am I. And last week on Well, Adam, Jesse, Alex and Tex had a look back at some of the issues and topics that played a role in the LGBTI community's health and well-being in 2016. They touched on issues including PrEP, that's pre-exposure prophylaxis, the state apology, Orlando and trans health. Now, John, what are we going to tackle this week?
Oh, so terribly much. With the new year looming before us, this week we're going to look at a few of the issues and topics everyone should have on their radar for 2017. We won't be able to predict the future, but we're going to have a look at where we think we might be headed with regard to issues like alcohol and drug use in the LGBTI community, the ongoing marriage equality discussion, as exhausting as that is.
Are we still doing that?
Oh, fuck.
It hasn't gone away, has it?
We'll get there. You know, whatever happens there. I'm not even going to mention the plebiscite. So, in addition to all these lovely topics, we get to talk about the fun-filled topic of LGBTI family violence and what's happening in all the rural and regional settings when it comes to LGBTI hell, that is an acronym, health.
And there's lots of things happening in the country, in the rural and regional areas.
As there should and need to be.
Indeed.
It's quite encouraging.
So once again, everyone, Happy New Year, and this is the first episode of Well for 2017, so we're glad to see the end of 2016, but...
Can you believe it's 2017 already?
Yeah,
Where did last year go?
Oh,
let's just put
all
it behind
sorts
us.
Of funny ways.
May 2017 be an improvement, not a hangover, because 2016...
Brexit, Trump. No, oh,
I know, well, now we get to see how it all plays out in reality, don't we, with Trump, so, Mr. President.
All this and more.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well here on Joy 94.9. I'm Daniel and I'm joined once again by my co-hosts John, Jack and Cal. With our sights set on the year ahead and those issues we're likely to see play a big role in the ongoing health and well-being of the LGBTI community. Marriage equality is still up in the air. And firstly, I suppose I want to say with a plebiscite off the agenda, is it, to borrow a phrase, dead, buried and cremated? Do we really think we've seen the last of it?
Not now, certainly not.
No. The plebiscite, I think we have.
But I think mention of it and a mention of that as some sort of option or we presented this idea, I think will come up. Because we don't have marriage equality yet. It's still, you know, an issue and it's a pending issue.
Mm. It won't get through even if anything but the plebiscite will not get through the Senate, will it?
Mm.
The way the Senate's comprised. The Senate has blocked it.
Yeah, that's the reason it was shot down.
And
that's
right. A while until we Senate have a new change. Senate.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's the thing we need to remember is like this election was exceptional because it was double dissolution. There was a very low bar for people to get in, you know, e.g. Pauline Hanson. Next election is less likely to be double dissolution, almost certainly not going to be. So you're more likely to have one or the other major parties getting a majority and Greens once again holding the balance of power. Mm. So it's depending on what bills get through, it's more likely to get through at the next election.
And Daniel, we were talking about this before. So there was money attached to this plebiscite.
I was going to say, according to a good source, okay. Jack, there was $160 million attached to us, which has been reallocated already... absorbed into the MEFO?
It has. For in the mid-year budget forward estimates, they took the $160 million off the table and it's been redistributed to other projects. So the money's not there.
To know where that is. It'd be wonderful to get a breakdown. I'm sure we'll never see that sort of information. But
I don't think it works like that.
So with all this in mind, Daniel or guys, where to now? Where do you think we are likely to see what will happen in 2017 in regard to marriage equality?
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if we saw marriage equality happen in 2017.
How? Why do you say that, John?
It's a little... It's very hopeful. Reading the tea leaves, yeah. And it is hopeful. But it's seeing that there's still some action happening, that the government, the bill that they would have put forward had the plebiscite carried, is still going to be debated in the Senate. There's a Senate inquiry happening. Public submissions are open until, I believe, mid-January. But I think what you see is this weird combination of events where you have the extreme right, who is obviously vehemently opposed to marriage equality in any sort, basically saying they're happy to break away from the liberal national majority. If they're ever freed from that shackle of this small but vocal minority, you would have the majority of the Liberal Party saying, all right, let's get it out of the way. We do not want this encumbering us at the next election. So let's get it out of the way sooner rather than later. We have a PM who we know is in favor of marriage equality. We have a Labour Party, the Greens, people who hold several seats saying, we want this to happen. So depending on what happens with people like George Christensen, I wouldn't be surprised if they went their own way, if marriage equality is back on the table.
Turnbull seems very bound by his own party, though, and my big fear is that we won't see anything happen until, you know, a future election, as an election promise, maybe.
I mean, but it's interesting. You know, you make up a really interesting point, John, that if you sort of cut that far end of things, the far extreme, if they actually go so far, and it may not be because of marriage equality, it might be another issue that pushes them on the line to fully break free.
Yeah, yeah.
But it might actually free up marriage equality as an issue to be kind of the brass ring for the coalition, I guess, to get points on the board.
Well, and I think, Daniel, like the point you said, Turnbull is encumbered by the right of his party, but it's interesting because he gave that speech to the Republican movement, and that's the first thing he's done since he became leader and became PM. It's like, so maybe he's taking his first tentative little baby steps
toward
growing a spine once again and being the man that we all know him to be, but who he just hasn't been for the past year and a half.
Circumstance. He's still carrying out the Tony Abbott policies, basically.
Absolutely.
I don't think we will wait until 2019 to the next federal election, because we have to remember the federal government has a one-seat majority in the House of Reps.
Yeah,
well, I like your tea leaves. Let's read your tea leaves because I think they're good. And so could we, for example, see members of the coalition cross the floor like we saw in New South Wales State Parliament with the Greyhound as well? That's been overturned, so let's not use that. But, you know,
well,
we could see people crossing the floor.
Well, they could, but I think the issue comes back down to a conscience vote that the Liberal or the coalition should consider.
I think it depends on the nature of the bill that goes before Parliament and what they're actually debating on, because there are, I believe, four different bills before Parliament right now that they could potentially consider, and they're all slightly different. But when you have people like Dean Smith and Tim Wilson who have acknowledged, it's like, all right, plebiscite is dead and gone, and this is an issue that's important to us, we need to see this happen. I could see them actually crossing the floor and doing it.
And I think that would, I mean, the other thing is, as we talked about this at the start of the show, we're tired, you know, and this is taking its toll. You know, we talked about how divisive a plebiscite would be and how much of a negative impact it would have on the health and well-being. But the fact of the matter is even the discussion around how divisive it is was already being divisive in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would be happy to see this be done in 2017 so we can, you know, really, you know, move past the impact that it already is having on the health and well-being of people.
But anyway, marriage equality is only one of a plethora of issues we're likely to continue to tackle as a community in the year ahead. Still to come, myself and the team will be talking about alcohol and drug use, regional and rural health, and of course, LGBTI family violence. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Welcome back. You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I am John, and I'm joined by three of my lovely co-hosts, Cal, Daniel, and Jack. 2017 is now here, and we've been talking about a range of issues, including marriage equality, which hopefully won't come up again during this show. but we expect to see several others making waves in our LGBTI communities. But one that's very close to Vac's heart is the health and well-being of LGBTI people living in rural and regional Victoria. Now, obviously, we are the Victorian AIDS Council, not the Melburnian AIDS Council, despite what it sometimes feels like. Yeah. But fortunately, this year, we were able to see the rollout of Vac Country, which is an office of ours located in Bendigo, provides a host of prevention and education services, which is really great, but obviously it's only just a start. So I want to see you guys. What do you think are some other issues that we need to be looking at during the year as an organization, but also as a community?
Well, I think the other thing is to just to take a step back. I think that VacCountry is a step in the right direction that we've seen this past year. Mm. But I think there's... That was a changing landscape that was already starting. I think that we saw, you know, John, you even hosted a chill out forum, a community forum this past year in 2016. But we had actually just done one the year before that. And I think that push into the regional and rural space was already, I suppose, on the radar. And for me, I mean, you know, I've been on the show before and talked about digital work and digital interventions. So I've talked about the mental health interventions you can do. And I guess one of the things that I've been so excited about is with digital, now that, you know, I know it seems really silly, but the thing is that now that mobile phone coverage is actually more, like, it's more accessible, and as NBN rollout is continuing to be a discussion on a nationwide level, it actually means that people in rural areas are actually able to access online resources. And sure, we know that face-to-face is always going to be more effective.
Yeah, certainly.
But if you can't get to the city, you can't get to the city, and digital is a better alternative than nothing. And so I think that's a really exciting thing that we'll continue to see. We'll continue to see in the new year.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dan.
Even I remember we had last year Leanne from Switchboard, the outgoing general manager, and she was mentioning that call volumes and also chat, there'd been a big increase in rural access, people in rural areas accessing the services. So whether it be call base or whether it be the chat on the internet as well. Yeah. So, a big demand. So it's good we're moving into this space more and more.
We saw this in HIV and bloodborne viruses in 2016 with the national government having an interest in doing health promotion rollout largely via a digital avenue. And so I think for regional and rural Victorians as well as in other states, I think that's a, you know, that's a really great thing. But it really has only been possible because of technology really catching up to those areas. Because, you know, 3-4 years ago, your coverage is going to be spotty at best.
Such a strange thought. But it's interesting that what it boils down to now is equity of access. The fact that if you live more than, say, 50 Ks outside of the city, you don't have access to something. It then becomes a burden to get into the city to get these things. I think one thing that we just saw it starting, but we're going to see the full rollout this next year, which will be exciting, is the expansion of the PrepX trial into rural and regional settings. I believe we have 6 sites that will be coming up over the next year, and we'll see 260 reserved places for people in the country to finally easily access PrEP.
What a great example. You know, 3 years ago when we were still really using PEP, and Victorian had an incredibly low number compared to, like, New South Wales points for PEP. Now we're doing PrEP, I mean, which is really cutting-edge stuff, if you will. I mean, at least in Victoria, or at least in Australia, rather. I know it's been around now for several years, but... it's great to see how quickly PrepX is growing.
And that's the fastest uptake as well, isn't it, when compared with some of the other similar trials overseas?
So I think it was France had like 1,000 spots to allocate within, I think, 12 months, and Victoria had 2,600, and we moved ours in like a matter of...
month. So I believe they expected to fill the 2,600, well, I should say the 23 and change 100.
Right, of course.
But we did it in half the time that it was expected, the time, which is remarkable. But it's interesting you raise PEP as an issue, PEP access. That continues to be an issue in rural and regional settings.
This actually was a really big topic of conversation when we did the training in Bendigo for new volunteers joining VacCountry. And generally we talk about it when we do inductions in Melbourne, but when we're out there, PEP was a really big discussion, and people were actually giving their personal stories around what had happened to them when they went to access it as well. And it's quite hard in rural settings.
And that, I think what you do there with healthcare, what you're touching on is there's still some of the work to be done as at frontline workers.
Yeah,
there's so much misinformation out there. And this exists in Melbourne as well. I think it's maybe a little better just again because there's greater access to information and education. But in rural settings, you just don't have access to that. And the healthcare workers are so inundated with other concerns and other needs that HIV being less prevalent in those settings, it's just not on their radar.
And if you're HIV positive too, S100 providers are few and far between in rural settings.
Yeah, there is one person we know of who lives out near, I believe near Bright, and this person has to drive something like 3.5 hours to access the nearest S100 prescriber, which is, for those listening, a person who has the ability to prescribe HIV medications. And that's not on. You have plenty of other issues to be dealing with when you're positive or worried about HIV. Then... driving that far.
And let alone how that access to treatment has a much bigger community impact. Lowering the viral load of an individual has an impact on the community viral load and prevention in the future.
and is actually, well, apparently more effective than, marginally more effective than PrEP in preventing HIV, strange as it sounds.
Now, Daniel, you just touched on something before. You're up there, you're up in Bendigo, you said, mm-hmm. doing training for volunteers. So that's about building capacity in that particular region, in the Loddon Mallee, around the Bendigo area.
And it was really good, a really big uptake. We had new volunteers who were enrolled in an outreach program. So this is the new funding received. Backcountry are going to be moving to that space in the next month or two, I believe. And that's covering the whole of Loddon Mallee. And so going online and being able to chat with people on apps.
It comes back to
back
your
to
point,
digital,
Cal.
Back to digital, yep.
But also, we can't forget our friends in Chill Out. Chill Out's happening in March, the Labor weekend in March. And we've got the lovely Merrin up in Dalesford managing Chill Out. And VAC will be hosting a couple of events in Dalesford. There will be the lavish lunch and the pool party, I believe, with a few...
Yeah,
rubber duckies in
well,
the pool.
I get very excited about sport and diversity and making that accessible. So I think you'll be seeing some water-based, not water sports. Let's not send a mixed message there.
No.
But I do think we'll be seeing some bumper polo. Perhaps maybe the surge will show up.
Sure.
Vic Water Polo has been particularly supportive, so hopefully we'll see that in Chill Out in the new year ahead of us, which is very exciting.
And I must say a call out to the GoGo organization, Gay Owned Go. Gay operated, who are wanting to marry up with VAC on some level and to promote greater LGBTI engagement in rural and regional areas around, particularly around the Dalesford area.
And I think that's, when you look at Dalesford and you look at Bendigo and you do look in other areas like Shepparton, you're reminded that there is a unique advantage to some of these regional centres because, rather than trying to sway the mainstream opinion of millions of people like you do in an urban epicenter. In these regional settings, it's much actually a lot less people. I mean, now granted, misinformation, in the same regard, misinformation can change the minds of the majority of opinion leaders when it's a smaller scale. I think you can see big changes in regional settings sometimes in a shorter period of time than you can when you're trying to move a much bigger mass of people. So I think it's very good to see. And look, we're working through it, and I'm sure we'll continue to work through it in 2017 and beyond. And we're working through a selection of issues we'll see affecting the health and well-being of our LGBTI communities here on Well this week, with some big issues still to come. You're listening to the 2017 kickoff episode of Well here on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well on Joy 94.9. I'm Cal, and along with my co-hosts John, Jack, and Daniel, we're talking about some of the sticky subjects that have been part of the discussion, what we reckon will continue to play a big role in the dialogue around LGBTI health in 2017. Alcohol and other drug use in the LGBTI community is something we've seen some really, really great steps forward in recent times. And we've talked about some of that on the show here before, like resources like Touchbase and the state making commitment to programs targeting alcohol and drug use specifically for the LGBTI communities. But I suppose, what do we think? Is our work done and dusted? We've got Touchbase, a national online resource. We know I love a good online resource. And we are seeing the government recommend, LGBTI targeted responses, not just trying to build it in, that there are unique needs there. What do we think?
Yeah, problem solved. We're done.
We've done a lot. So what are the gaps? Does anyone aware of any gaps or improvements?
Well, I think we still see... They did pick LGBTI targeted programs, but I think there are specific niches in there. Alcohol and drug use for lesbian, bisexual, and queer women is still, actually alcohol and tobacco use, tobacco cessation in particular. And we've started to see some campaigns in other states targeting that, but I think there's still a ways to go.
Maybe a pathway to that end is through the women's health conference that VAC.
That's true. That'll be key.
ACON initiative. Yeah. So there's women's health issues around alcohol and other drugs we need to tackle.
Yep.
I think that's really great for getting to people who work in the sector, work in healthcare. But I think one of the main problems we have is actually connecting with people in the community and basically desensationalizing the whole issue and getting people acquainted with the fact. Because granted, there is, say, ICE, because that's such a hot topic. There is problematic ICE use. We need to acknowledge that, and we need to provide services and assistance to those people. But we also need to acknowledge that there are a lot of people who use the drug, manage their use, and they're just fine. We also need to acknowledge that alcohol, as common as it is socially, creates far more harm than any other drug out there, and that it's something that's so socially acceptable that we're willing to just kind of gloss over it when it is problematic. Mm. But again, just getting the hysteria out of it and talking to people in plain language and saying, it's like, don't stigmatize people about their use. Just try and understand it. Try and treat this like a health problem rather than some sort of moral failing on the part of people who are engaged in these behaviors.
I think you're onto something. If you look at VAC has done it, but also other organizations, when you do a community forum and it's just about sex, even PrEP, we were very fortunate in how progressive the dialogue of the community was in regards to that. But if we hold a community forum that's specifically about drug use, you're lucky if you'll see more than 10 people show up. Yeah. And we've done that. We've tried that a few times. You know, the exception to that was probably the hypothetical that we did. The first hypothetical we did, we were about to do our third, but the one 2 years ago with MJ Loves Tina, Charlie's Chasing Harry, had a drug focus. But because it was sort of hiding in the clothing of having different celebrities and media personalities, and it was part of Midsummer Festival, we were able to get a big, but you almost have to sugarcoat it.
In a funny way, you do, because it's a very emotive issue, and people if we were to just approach it as it is, cold dead facts, I think it would create a lot of apprehension on parts of people who have had bad experiences with it or know people who have. It's going to be a difficult topic to confront, but the hypothetical might actually be a really great place to talk about those issues, because it's almost like saying laughter is the best medicine. When you take the fear and the trauma out of something, it becomes much easier to discuss and contend with, because you can kind of laugh at it, even though it's a bit of gallows humor. And maybe that's what we as an organization need to do, is find ways that we can talk about this without making it seem like this terrifying Grim Reaper style issue.
Well, and it's interesting that you mentioned that too. So VAC has actually just released at the very end of 2016, released a safe injecting video.
Yeah.
And they use an animation to make it a little bit more accessible and to, we see so much in the mainstream that, when you've got stuff about, either tobacco use or ice use, where it's this highly dramatic, public messaging, is that far away from the tradition of the Grim Reaper? I don't know. Perhaps it's, much in the same vein, where it is sensationalizing it rather than looking at things like a slow burn, where people are slowly losing relationships. It's not these big dramatic scenes at the hospital. It's, the use that gets out of, hand is maybe the stuff where people are self-isolating or, unable to manage other resources in their life alongside that. So do we think it's harm minimalization versus just saying no?
Just to say no.
Dear God, Nancy Reagan.
Does addressing AOD issues need any to be more targeted for LBQ women or MSMs? Like, is the evidence there that it's particularly bad or worse in these communities?
LBQ women, I believe it is. I mean, alcohol and tobacco cessation, we know definitely is. We were actually talking, I was having a conversation with a queer woman at VAC the other day, and we were talking about pride and diversity in sport, and we were saying how some lesbian and bisexual women have reported back that, they get involved in sport, which is a really healthy and improves health outcomes. And then they, in that sporting culture, the pub gets introduced, and suddenly all of a sudden it becomes about the pub and not about the sport anymore, and then it drops off, and then you have lesbian rates of alcohol consumption and then obesity kind of skyrocket all of a sudden.
It's hard to say. It's like, it is worse, statistically speaking, is worse for women, lesbian, bisexual, and queer women. But as far as the substance of the issues, we don't know if it is that different. Like, obviously, each individual experience is different, but when we're talking about health promotion and connecting with people and how to talk with them, I don't know that there's really that much difference. I think it all comes down to this theory, or in part comes down to this theory, that the opposite of addiction is connection. People tend to, consume more drugs and alcohol or engage in these sorts of behaviors more if they feel like, one, it will make them more socially acceptable to a certain circle of people, if it will fill a void where they do feel, like you said, Caleb, isolated and cut off. But tailoring that message to specific communities is incredibly difficult. So it's like, how do we do that? And I think we really all need to sit down as a community and talk about how we accomplish that.
I think you're right. I think there's a lot more considerations, that maybe is more wrapped up in things like mental health status than your, other kind of socioeconomic identifiers.
It's just one of those issues that I don't think we're going to be able to resolve today, but fortunately we have the entirety of 2017 to do, and we'll fix it by the end of the year. But we will, I know VAC will be doing a lot in this space. So still to come, we're going to have a look at LGBTI family and intimate partner violence, or relationship violence is another way to describe it. You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I'm Jack, and I'm joined today by my co-hosts John, Cal, and Daniel. Now, we've touched on quite a bit today, but an area I know is going to be part of the ongoing discussion about our community's health and well-being is LGBTI family violence. Is it really such a big issue, and what does it all mean, and where's the evidence to drive it? Does anyone have any ideas on
this? Before we even get started with that, I've heard same-sex attracted family violence. I hear domestic same-sex domestic violence. Where do we stand in like the correct terminology there?
Well, it gets tricky. Everybody's going to ascribe to it their own terminology, but if we're looking at the official terminology used by the state of Victoria, they prefer the acronym LGBTI. It is pretty easily understood by most people. Moves to kind of change that to...
So it's LGBTI, but is it family violence, relationship violence, domestic violence?
Well, it's interesting. They say family, at least when I've worked with Victorian police, they say violence. LGBTI family violence. Okay. However, that does encompass relationship violence. That covers intimate partner violence. You don't necessarily have to be residing in the same dwelling. You don't necessarily have to be... it could be a friendship-based relationship. It's quite expansive and it's quite encompassing, but I think they restrict the name of it just because it's like, all right, we know what it means, but for the purpose of the public, it means we'll use this terminology.
Because for so long, it was really just called domestic violence, and now it's not often at all that you'll hear that term used, and so there's all these other ones popping up.
And I think to answer your initial question about whether or not it is an issue, Jack, I think absolutely. I think what we saw really being teased out, and I think just that initial conversation in 2016 was one that was sort of saying, again, like alcohol and other drug, we need a targeted response to this. Because the biggest thing is that, you know, we know statistically speaking in the mainstream community, males are viewed as perpetrators and females are viewed as victims in the LGBTI space.
Sure.
That's challenged. And I think that you need to have responses to that accordingly. So I think we're seeing some movement there, and I think we are seeing a lot more here on the horizon. And it's, steps in the right direction, which is
absolutely. Now, John, violence, relationship violence, domestic violence, what's meant? But that conjures up an image in my head of physical abuse and things like that.
And I think predominantly it is physical abuse, but again, it's subjective based on the person's experience. If you feel you have experienced violence, within quotes, on what that means. So, for example, if you are an HIV-positive person, you disclose your status to your parents, who you don't live with anymore, you're independent from them, and maybe they don't physically abuse you, but they hurl emotional abuse at you, maybe they cut you off financially. If they are abusing you, that could be considered a form of violence against you. But again, it depends very much on how you take it. If you don't take it as such, it's not violence. But if you feel you have been, again, abused, violated, if you are experiencing emotional trauma as a result of it, then yeah, absolutely. It might not rise to the level of, say, a crime in one sense, but it's still something that needs to be treated as serious and addressed.
They can be more subtle than overt violent
and
physical violence.
Economic violence, I think, is a really interesting one because there are so many times that you hear people that feel trapped in a relationship because, you know, of the simple logistics behind resources, you know, about I couldn't leave my partner. I mean, whether or not there are kids involved, just the idea of whether or not you can, you know, you have the financial income to look after yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because your partner may own the house.
Yeah.
Right.
You have nothing.
And you don't have the financial system set up for a place where you have an income that would let you go out on your own because there are those initial logistic costs. I think there's actually, just at the end of 2016, there was that announcement of LGBTI family violence support packages, which I think are available actually through VAC if you call up 03-9865-6700. And you can speak to the project worker around family violence. And you can actually access those funds, which are like emergency sort of relief funds to help you kind of get out of that situation.
And I know this is something that's been promoted at Pronto as well. So when we're engaging, this conversation does come up. With people accessing rapid testing, and we extend that service as well, and if people need to get access, which has been really beneficial for a few people.
Yep. Yeah. And not only Pronto, but Equinox at the same site. And we do hear an increase of partner violence for, you know, women that are living with HIV and for people from the trans and gender diverse communities. So, yeah, I think these targeted responses do need to be there. And that's, you know, something that we'll look forward to in the new year. And I think we are seeing some movement and it is being recognized at a state level.
I think the important thing to remind people that if they feel that they're at risk, of immediate risk, they need to call the police on 000. Don't wait around. That's the important thing.
Absolutely. For emergencies there are. And there's revisioning as well, which is an existing
revisioning
program,
which is a great tool to about behavior change.
Okay, cool. No, so forget the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard. They have excellent resources, not only through what they provide directly, but they have referral pathways. So for people who need more extensive counseling, who need to contact the police, because contacting the police is quite an extreme step in many cases, and it might not always be the appropriate.
If you do feel that when you are contacting the police, of course, the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officer, which you can request if possible in some locations.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a list of Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officers online that people can find and hopefully find the help they need.
So it's good to know that there's lots happening in this space, and I expect LGBTI family violence will definitely be something we'll continue to discuss on Well this year and in the future, as well as several other issues the team has discussed over the past two episodes as well. More to come. You're listening to Well on Joy 94.9.
Are you an older lesbian in Victoria? The Matrix Guild is here for you. We organise social and supportive services, advocate for appropriate housing, and offer free visitor service for you at home or in care. We're always training new visitor volunteers, so please get in touch. Our annual fundraising lesbian comedy gala will keep you laughing all year. Visit matrixguildvic.org.au.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. This has been a swell start to Well in 2017. I'm Cal, and a big thank you to my delightful co-hosts from the Well team, John, Jack, and Daniel. Thank you all. We have been talking about just a few of the issues we reckon we'll see impacting our LGBTI communities this year. And last week, the other half of the Well team discussed some of the issues 2016 brought to the surface. And some of those will also continue to impact the gender, sex, and sexually diverse community in 2017. Looking back on Well in 2016, since we didn't have the opportunity to be reflective like the other half of the group, did any of you have any standout moments or shows that you're particularly fond of over the last year?
Well, look, I've just joined the team this year, I think along with John as well.
Yeah.
And for me, A Week of Leather was eye-opening.
Why was that?
Electro Play, if I remember rightly.
So
I learned a lot. Yeah,
you did. You loved it.
A little bit too much, maybe.
Yep. Hey there.
And we had, of course, BJ from Eagle Leather, who's been on before about various esoteric practices. It's always a good show. I personally was very excited to have an international live call-in when we touched base with some of the VAC team that was over in Durban for AIDS 2016.
You did, international live feed.
Yes, that's the first time I did. I mean, logistically, actually didn't make that big of a difference. but, you know, just making sure, like, someone over there had a mobile that could reach back here and had their, you know, whatnot.
All the that things was, that could have gone wrong.
Oh, we had a little bit. We had a bit of pretty nasty delay at the time, but, you know, we worked through it, and it was very exciting all the same.
Well, I think a standout point was the women's conference, the Queer Women's and Lesbian Health Conference, which VAC and ACON jointly presented. It started in 2015. It was built upon and expanded and grew in 2016 this year.
It's in Sydney next year, is
next
that
year
right?
It's moving to Sydney. So this fills an important space, I think, in the queer community's health agenda.
Well, and you are always a history-minded gentleman.
I am.
And, you know, one of our founding board members was, you know, driving the charge was a lesbian. And, you know.
But yes, that's right.
So it's good to 30 some years later to finally give back to that community.
Allison.
So Allison Thorne, that's correct.
I think for me it was probably due. Go ahead.
No, just as due that we recognize it.
Yeah, fair enough. I think doing the shows on the election was pretty interesting because
you loved it, John.
Sure, we can say that. No, it's important because I think as a community, it's easy for us to be very cynical about politics because we're so often used as a back and forth or as ammunition. So I think we need to highlight why it's important to us. Yep. But my friends, that's all for us today. If you've missed previous episodes of Well, you can catch our podcast produced by the lovely David. That's at www.joy.org.au/well. Next week, Cal and Jack will be back in the studio diving into the summer festival season with a look forward to Midsummer 2017. That's next week at 8 p.m. here on Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Happy New Year.
See ya.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.